people with disability and mental health.
There's always controversy with us.
The mysteries of the mind and consciousness.
And we might get to the bottom of something, or we might start something new.
We're going to run the gamut and we're going to have a good time.
Waking Braves. No, not Waking Braves. We're Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves?
Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves!
We are back, folks, with episode number 3 of our movie trilogy, which is about
art imitating life.
Or life imitating art.
From the movies.
In the movie world.
That's right, John. There's been endless examples of this kind of phenomenon. As beings, we do kind of have a tendency to operate in a monkey see, monkey do type of way, which makes us prime candidates for the moving pictures, the shadow play, to be filled with advertisements, product placements, and also political messaging, one might say propaganda.
Yeah, well, this is kind of an old question or debate about the place of art in our world.
I mean, think about James Bond and a cigarette, you know, the classic James Bond, or Humphrey Bogart and cigarettes. Like, Hollywood really pushed cigarettes back in the day. I was watching some films from about 20 years ago, and this theme, some action-type films, and this theme of diamonds kept coming up. Diamonds, diamonds. Well, obviously, the diamond industry was giving Hollywood some kickbacks then.
There's always been product placement. I think it was recognised as a great avenue for advertising and promotion since movies first appeared, really. But it was probably fairly subtle back in the early days of movie making. But these days, films are full of all kinds of ideas, products, technologies, cultural mindsets.
Yes, well, that's the thing as well with movies, is that most movies reflect the sort of dominant cultural forces and values at the time when they're made.
Certainly they're a window into those things. I guess it depends on the agenda of the producers and the movie makers. I think what started to happen, or they recognised fairly quickly, is the power of the screen to program people's thinking. And this is where propaganda comes into the picture, and the insertion of those kinds of concepts into the entertainment side of the movie industry. And of course, I guess that's its most basic function. From the view of the audience, is a form of entertainment. That's why we do it, right? Kick back and look at that screen. Escape, suspend, disbelief. It's interesting that we're constantly encouraged to do that, to suspend disbelief and go along with the storyline. I think there's something in that, that we're not very often encouraged to suspend belief. The opposite. Hey, hey. I guess it's not a new discussion whether in the movie world life imitates art or art imitates life.
A very old discussion.
Yeah, and there's probably lots of great examples of it working both ways. Certainly movies are very influential. The screen is a big part of how most people create their reality. And a great example of a movie that had a great effect on not only the way people think, but also on the actual real technology of the world, is Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, which came out in
1968, so a year before the moon landing.
Right, so there was a space program then. I think they were kind of flying around in rockets and trying to kind of stay up there for a while and falling back down again, but they hadn't really gone anywhere. I don't think there were any spacesuits at that point of time. But then along came Kubrick's movie, which was amazing. I mean, it's incredible. It still holds its relevance, and it does not really look that dated when you watch it in terms of the imagery and the technology. In particular, the spacesuits, which the NASA spacesuits ended up looking almost identical to the imagined spacesuits and a lot of the other tech. Some of it didn't materialise, like the revolving space station. I kept waiting for them to create the revolving, you know, the Ferris wheel space station. It was such a great part of that Kubrick movie, but we just got some little tank floating around in space instead. We didn't get the artificial gravity thing. But so many other aspects of that movie have become real in terms of people's perceptions about outer space.
That's right, and I think the science fiction genre is probably one of the most fertile for this kind of phenomenon of life imitating art in the movies. I mean, even if you go way back to those old serials, like your Buck Rogers and your Flash Gordon and Dick Tracy and stuff, they've got technology like that looks like the Apple Watches, you know, that people have now, this little screen on their wrist that they're talking to. And so,
yeah, and I remember a French movie, I think it was one of the first, touted as one of the first motion pictures, and it's actually a classroom setup where you have these elite-looking teachers, and they've got blackboards with rocket ships blasting off, and in parabolic projectile motion, and going around the moon. And this was made,
I believe in like the
1890s or something.
Yeah, let me look that up. It's George Méliès's trip to the moon. So it's a 1902 film directed by George Méliès. And funnily enough, it was very inspired by Jules Verne's From Earth to the Moon novel from 1865. And of course, Jules Verne is someone who's credited with inventing submarines before they were a thing.
The Nautilus.
Yeah, trip 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Yeah, sci-fi always at the forefront.
Like the Star Wars, were there more than three?
there was three originally.
Right. And Star Trek, of course, which were these futuristic one world government, everybody's the same.
Do they...
social constructs.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Star Trek kind of idea is this kind of utopian idea. And I would imagine that, you know, some of the people who fancy themselves the saviors of the world today might be trying to model themselves off of a Star Trek-esque...
Hello, Klaus Schwab.
There's lots of examples of movies that come out that are so hugely influential that they people develop a whole thesis, a whole life philosophy around the film and studying it and quoting it so many times. And I think The Godfather definitely fits into that category. And some people have said that the movie was really embraced by the mob itself, you know, and they kind of appreciate and resonate with that theme of the loyalty and these kind of elements. So there's been a lot of cases of that within like the gangster movie world where they'll talk about like some gangsters being fans of gangster movies.
Yes, movies leaving to ritualistic participation in movie going. The thing that makes me think of is the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Hoyt's in Town in the, I don't know how long it went on for, but in the 80s they used to have the Rocky Horror Picture Show on at midnight every Saturday night. And there used to be, you know, a few hundred hardcore people that all used to dress up and go along to the session and participate in the actual movie. Have you ever experienced that?
No, but I've heard about it, and I know about another ritual that they do at the Cremorne or Fiem. There's this cult film from 2003 called The Room, and in that movie it's like a ceremonial custom for people to throw spoons at the screen. They get given spoons before.
Plastic ones, I hope.
Of course, yeah. Plastic spoons, or probably using paper spoons these days. Let's say they're being environmentally conscious, but yeah, so it's interesting, that kind of that cult phenomenon. And apparently in America there's Big Lebowski conventions where people rock up dressed like the dude. And so...
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
Hello, Ivy. So movies are such a great resource for the powers that be in terms of persuading people to think in certain ways or take on certain reactions to certain things.
That's right, John. I mean, a good example of this is in Hollywood in World War II. Of course, a lot of the big-time movie directors and stars were in propaganda-type movies, but one of the kinds of propaganda movies that was coming out to drum up, I guess, patriotism was this genre, and this was, like, early in the war, before America joined up, but they'd have these, like, basically movies set in World War I. That was a big thing going on in the early part of World War II. And we see as well how much... It's crazy. You can look up a list of how many movies are funded by the military. And a lot of it is, most of it is like stuff you'd think is like, yeah, Black Hawk Down, okay. But then there's a lot of other stuff where it's kind of more surprising, but...
This is another interesting area of discussion, and that's the movie makers and their agendas. And I guess that's what we're talking about here, is sometimes it's more than just entertainment. The value of the movie is like gold. In this modern world where everybody looks at the screen all day long, and most of entertainment comes from the screen.
Yeah, I mean, think about some of those really, those movies that really changed up the zeitgeist. Like a movie like Deliverance probably made people scared to go out into the... to go canoeing, to go rafting.
I think Jaws did. It was the big one when it comes to the water, fear of swimming in the water.
It's funny as well in action movies how they, you know, the villains, the kind of people that get villainized, is very much a reflection of the culture that's being pushed at the time.
Yeah, when I was a kid, it was the Germans... And
the Russians.
The Japanese. No, not the Russians.
That came later in the 80s.
Well, interesting. I mean, the Cold War was really going on then, but it wasn't really our focus in this country. We fought the Vietnam War. Most of the storybooks and cartoons and comics that were around in those days, this is like the 70s, was World War II.
Yeah, that's right.
And the baddies were... either the Germans or the Japanese, mainly the Germans, actually. I remember playing with my sister, playing The Nazis Are Coming, which was one of our favourite sort of role-playing games that we would drop into when we wanted to entertain ourselves.
There was an example of a modern film, I think it was a 2013 action film called Olympus Has Fallen, and I believe they changed the villain from being Chinese to... as he was in the original draft of the screenplay, they changed him to being North Korean.
And at some point they must have all become Middle Eastern.
Well, that was
so many of the wars in the last 20 years have been in the Middle East, not in Asian countries.
Yeah, that was a big thing in Hollywood, like in like 90s action movies. There was a lot of movies with Middle Eastern dudes, like, blow it, the terrorists That was a big boogeyman for sure. And there's been a strong anti-Russian sentiment in entertainment for, I would say, the last sort of 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, it's almost kind of a resurgence of the Cold War, sort of around the era of...
The Russians are coming, the Russians.
Obama and Secretary Clinton and... The narrative regarding the evil Russians has really ramped up, yeah.
Another big one of life imitating art is just the whole alien thing, like the UFO, ETs, visitors from outer space. And, you know, you go and, once again, Spielberg, you know, it's like you go and watch a movie like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, from 1977.
Yeah, the space aliens, I guess, you know, the science fiction have been around for a long time. Science fiction stories and stories about other worlds in outer space. But there wasn't really a lot of reference to monsters from outer space. It was more like we had War of the Worlds. When was that?
So the book by H.G. Wells came out in 1898, but 40 years later... in 1938, Orson Welles did this famous or notorious radio broadcasting, and the sort of legend around that is that people thought that it was real.
Yeah, I've certainly heard that, and it's probably by and large true because people used to listen to the radio for all of the information back then. That was the feed, really, and... people just weren't aware, though, listening to a story. They thought it was actually going on.
Mm.
I can see that happening the same way as I can see people believing what they see on television now and thinking that it's actually going on.
Well, actually, that makes me think of a movie that we didn't get a chance to mention last week, but the Blair Witch Project, because there was a big legend around that because it was like such an indie movie and it was all done in that, like, found footage kind of style. And so people thought that movie was actually real. Like, it was just, like, this account of these people getting lost in the woods and menaced by the witch or whatever. So...
yeah, and that certainly gave it an element of... it was even more spooky for the watcher, believing that it was, this was actually real
yeah.
footage that had been put, like, a doco or something.
Mm. And, of course, we've had the... getting back to the aliens, we've had the alien disclosure last year, which no one seems to care about. The CE5 stuff, Stephen Greer, is that the guy? Or?
He's a doctor and he's constantly doing the circuit, but I remember he did a whole series of disclosure videos with veterans of Navy, Air Force, Army who had had... I think a lot of pilots who'd had direct experience with unknown phenomena, and he called that some kind of the Disclosure Project. And everyone thought something was going to come of that from hopefully declassification of secret alien-related, space-related stuff, but it didn't actually eventuate. There's been no government disclosure, even though various administrations have certainly spoken about it and made it a talking point. We've never got really good anything more out of the government in relation to any of their research facilities or army bases or space programs, either terrestrial or extraterrestrial.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
So, suffice to say, life definitely imitates art, and art definitely imitates life. But there are also been lots of great movies that haven't really got any kind of audience at all.
That's right, John. In fact, you introduced me to a couple of them.
Would one of those be God's Lonely Man?
That's right, John. It came out in 1996, and it's written and directed by Francis von Zenrich, starring Michael Weill.
And it's a fantastic insight into the lunacy, the crazy world of substance abuse, and it has some other topics in there as well.
I think you quite aptly described it as being like an indie, more indie version of Taxi Driver, because it is kind of one of these stories of lonely single guy going down a dark path.
Yeah, he's kind of like, he's not really a hero type character at all, but he's, he comes across a situation involving a young girl, and that leads on to his redemption, really, as a human being in regards to how he's living his life. He actually gets a sense of purpose there.
September 3rd, 1993. I have been soft. I have let them do it. They've carefully taken over my mind little by little, and they have got to be stopped. I cannot let my brain shrink any longer.
And this movie is just a really great character study and a well-made film. It's one of those movies that really gets under your skin. And I don't know anyone who's seen it. I've recommended it to two people and they loved it. So you're spreading the word, John.
Yeah, well, I actually caught it on VHS about 20 years ago. Found it in the video shop. Don't know. You can, I think there's a BitTorrent version of it still.
You can
around.
Just watch it on YouTube. Yeah, easy access, baby.
Yeah, I think that's the same copy of it that I found on BitTorrent. It's not a high res, but no. It's watchable.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's no reviews of it on Rotten Tomatoes, which
it's kind of like it never happened.
Yeah. And it's got, like, a pretty good cast. I mean, I guess Justine Bateman would be the biggest name. She's the woman that, like, rejects him when he asks her out. But, yeah, great movie. Highly recommended. And another one that you showed me that's also from the 90s is FTW, also known as The Last Ride.
And that's my favourite love story, really, because it's got all the elements in it for me. It's got, like, car obsession, hot-rodded cars. It's got horses in it.
That's right.
It's got a character who's basically a good bloke but falls on very hard times. It's circumstantially, his life just goes the way it goes. He meets a troubled, beautiful
lady, played by Laurie Singer.
Damsel. She's not exactly a damsel. She is actually a damsel in distress.
So, yeah, so then the love interest is played by Laurie Singer. The villainous brother is played by Peter Berg, who went on to become an accomplished movie director in his own right. But this is another movie. I mean, I guess this was a time in Rourke's career when, you know, it was after his, like, facial issues and
he's still looking pretty young and still looking pretty good.
Yes.
I think he was kind of, like, at his height back then as an actor. And the character's name was Frank T. Wells, and he had a tattoo on his arm, FTW. You know, I came across this movie when I was in Japan in the early 90s where I figure it must have been released first, because it's not known, the movie, as FTW. It's called The Last Ride. And you can find it, I think, right?
I hope so.
It's out there anyway. It'll be on BitTorrent. Other lost movies?
Yes. Another obscure gem that I discovered is courtesy of Quentin Tarantino. Is this, I guess you could call it a horror film, but not really, but it's this film from 1970 starring Glenn Ford called The Brotherhood of the Bell.
Yeah, that's a beauty. And I think you might have put me onto that one. It's about secret societies and international intrigue.
Yeah, and there was an aspect of this film that I thought was very extremely telling, in which they basically show that an attempt to critique this kind of shadowy, mysterious, like, entity results in people getting associated with being racist or being a radical. It gets politicized. It gets put into this kind of divide and conquer type of game. So it's a very clever film. And that's, once again, on YouTube in a watchable kind of copy.
Another one of my favourite forgotten movies would be Sidney Poitier in Brother John, which was a fantastic film, and I don't come across many people who remember it or who watched it, but it was kind of like about this character who appears back in the town of his birth sort of many years later, and he's been all over the world. He's quite a mysterious character, and the thrust of the story is he's kind of like an angel who's come back to witness the earth and what man has created, and to come to some judgment about whether it's worth continuing the experiment. But a fantastic film, Brother John. So I think we can agree it would be true to say that although movies are a form of entertainment for most people that watch them, they're far more than that, in that they really establish a worldview and an understanding of the things outside our direct experience.
They influence the imagination.
Indeed, in our understanding of reality itself, because most of the stuff that our heads are full of it has nothing to do with our immediate lives, our day-to-day lives. And we get an enormous amount of these concepts and ideas from the storytelling in movies.
They influence our beliefs, our imagination, and then our minds co-create reality, therefore creating a reality that most people agree upon, a reality that is strikingly like the movies.
You sound like the Twilight Zone guy. Yes, you were about to enter. Which is true. It should be the beginning of every movie, that kind of announcement. So, we hope we've given you some food for thought in relation to
the flickering shadow box.
In relation to the role that movies play in our understanding of the world we live in.
I suppose as long as movies are around, they're going to be influencing how we see the world. This brings us to the close of our season. We'll be back at an undetermined time on Breaking Waves. Until then, keep listening to East Side.
And we'll be back sometime soon.
Ta-ta for now, folks.
Arrivederci.
Au revoir, bonsoir.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The Community Broadcasting Foundation resources community-owned and operated media stations just like this one that connect people and tell vital, local stories so that we all enjoy a more vibrant, inclusive Australian culture and healthy democracy. Find out more about our work at cbf.com.au.